Hi, I'm Frances Katzen and welcome to my podcast, The World of Real Estate. In this series, we will explore the world's largest asset class and how it plays out on a global scale. So I'd like to introduce our guest today, Mr. Liam Bailey, the partner of Knight Frank and global head of research of Knight Frank. Boy, I'm so excited to be interviewing you today.
Great to be with you, and thank you very much for inviting me onto your show.
Pleasure. Could you please tell us a little bit about yourself, Knight Frank, and what you do for them?
Yeah, so I am the head of the research teams here at Knight Frank. So I'm based in London. We've got a team of about 30 people doing research into residential and commercial property here in London, the UK, and around the world. We work very closely with your team at Douglas Elliman in New York, working with Jonathan Miller and also Andrew Watchfogel and his team as well. So we're just trying to understand key trends in residential development, sales, and also just really trying to sort of see where we think things will be going over the next few years.
Would you say Knight Frank and Douglas Elliman? I mean, some people get confused. Are Knight Frank and Douglas Elliman the same company or just alliances?
It's an alliance between two independent companies. So, you know, Douglas Elliman, long established independent company, and Knight Frank is an independent partnership based out of London. So, the relationship we have is an arrangement or agreement between two independent firms.
How does the partnership between Knight Frank and Douglas Elliman help with selling properties in New York to citizens that are currently living abroad or in other countries?
Yeah, I think we've got a number of offices around the world, and obviously we've got buyers who will then express an interest in buying property in New York, which is great. But increasingly, we've got a number of what we call ambassadors based out of the London office who travel regularly into other markets. And I think because those individuals, and there's probably sort of 20 of them in total, because they work with your teams, they travel regularly to the U.S., they've got an understanding of the real estate market in the U.S., and they're able to kind of sell the opportunity and the properties that you've got available, and actually sort of transmit that and translate it for different markets. So I think that's become a really kind of compelling sell for us.
It's very different to watch a referral go from New York to Russia or Paris than it is from home to home within New York City. It has a very different cultural transfer within it. Can you tell us a little more on how the process of working with two brokerages that have an alliance looks? Does this simplify the process or make it more confusing?
I think it simplifies the process. I mean, ultimately, we've got clients who would like to understand what they can do in America, and then vice versa. Your brokers have got clients who are buying in Miami, but they're actually also thinking of buying into Europe or wherever. And I think it's got to make things simpler if our key agents and your key brokers begin to know each other. And one of the most important things we do is our global residential conference in London in April each year. Mm-hmm. We also have a conference in Asia. We've just been to actually, and a number of your key brokers and your key teams will come to those events. In fact, mm-hmm. actually, the London events become quite a big a big event now for Douglas Elliman brokers. And actually, recently Maria Morris, who runs our Dubai office, event with key Douglas Elliman brokers going over to Dubai. So I think those kind of opportunities, they really help cement the relationship and help to cross sell knowledge and experience, and just allow all of us, really, whether it's US brokers or the Knight Frank brokers, to become much more confident in selling our global offer.
I think that's actually the most important component, which is how do you speak to these markets, and the knowledge behind these sectors are important. The New York City real estate market is particularly sensitive to economic conditions beyond our borders. What is your take on the global economy right now?
Well, we noted actually in the Wealth Report this year that the global economy was slowing. But I mean, there's a bit of context because the last 3 years have been incredibly strong. So we've had, sort of 3 years of very, very strong growth globally. The U.S. has been, the kind of leading part of that story. And there has been a sort of signs of a slowdown from that high point now for sort of 12 months. And, you know, whilst, you know, no one is really, well, few economists are expecting a global recession.
Correct.
The global economy will slow from here. Mm-hmm. And that obviously begins to sort of suggest different strategies to our investors and our clients about actually how they want to position themselves in a slower growth environment.
But it was very interesting. I visited you this summer to hear the wealth report spoken in the Hamptons, and there was a very interesting statistic that you brought to light about the art market. Can you speak a little bit about the highest trade we saw for that? It wasn't Coons. What was it? I can't remember now, but you put it out there, and I was floored. I think it was $91 million.
Yeah, no, it was well remembered. It was a Jeff Koons sculpture,
a rabbit
sculpture. But the reason I mentioned it was because we've been tracking art and other collectibles in the Wealth Report for a number of years,
right?
Really to help understand actually what are our clients thinking about and how do they view alternative investments to property at the moment and where they see property and real estate within their portfolio. And I think really, one of the biggest stories biggest narratives we saw was this kind of shift from financial assets and intangible assets over the last decade towards tangibles like property, like art, fine wine, classic cars, because investors were slightly nervous of where they how they saw their portfolios perform in mm-hmm. the crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a significant shift in confidence for investors looking to trust the performance of tangible assets and you know, building collections that they can enjoy, but also that they can profit from.
Do you find that the markets have rebounded, but the real estate has not?
I think the real estate market has. Well, it's funny. I think the real estate market globally has slowed in the last year or so. I mean, we've seen the same thing in New York, as you've seen in London and many of our other markets. Some of it is down to taxation. So, you know,
yeah.
You've obviously had tax changes in the last 12 months in New York, and we've seen that in many other markets.
Brexit.
But I think also there's just this issue that, you know, we've come off, you know, 10 years of very strong growth in most property markets around the world. And there is, even though interest rates are low and going lower, there's little headroom at the moment for purchasers to keep bidding prices higher. Mm. You know, affordability is still an issue, even if you're buying it in the prime market.
Well, I don't think we're seeing a lot of wage growth. I think that's part of the issue too. Taxation,
yeah,
and
absolutely.
Wage growth, you know?
Yeah, and I think fundamentally, taking out of the equation the kind of discretionary purchases by very wealthy people, you know, most markets like New York or London, they're driven by workers, and they're driven
exactly.
by what those workers are earning and job creation, and those are the basics.
That's exactly.
And whilst most of those, mm-hmm. you know, most of those things are relatively positive still, you know, even in that environment, if you've had a doubling of values in 10 years, it isn't sustainable to think that's going to continue at that rate in the future.
Yeah, it's also very interesting here in New York as we see the entry market recede because they have the least to spend and the most to lose. So it's a very interesting adjustment. So going back to the point, which is the art market seemed to sustain against a real estate market that adjusted. It was very strange to me because usually that's an extension of real estate excess, you know.
It's funny because actually whilst there's been some big headline sales and the Jeff Koons sale and other sort of sales that we noted, there was the issue there is that behind the scenes, actually in the wider art market and other collectible markets, actually the run of the mill. The average lots haven't been achieving such strong prices. So mm-hmm. actually, there's been a flight to quality, and more, more investment has been going on in the very expensive end of the collectibles market. But I don't think it's been reflected across the board.
Got it. The New York real estate market has had and seen a softening, as we've just spoken about. Which cities are flourishing and why?
In the U.S.
All over, global.
I think...
Are you finding anywhere that's flourishing now that regimes or governments or taxation has shifted in those areas? I mean, or are we really not seeing it?
I mean, an interesting, you know, group of markets really is in continental Europe. So, you know, whilst the US and the UK and Asian markets were sort of booming in sort of 2010, 2011, European markets were still struggling because they'd had the Eurozone crisis as well as the financial crisis.
Sure,
so they began their recovery much later than other markets. And actually places like Paris or Berlin and even Madrid and other European centres have been performing quite strongly for a couple of years, and that seems to be continuing. So we'd expect to see double-digit growth in some of those markets over the next 12 months.
Wow.
But I think even in, you know, yes, the US markets have come off from where they were.
Sure,
I think you've still got some really strong, you know, sort of narratives and backstories behind your markets. So places like Austin or
Texas,
you know, Denver and other sort of key knowledge hubs or expanding knowledge hubs, there's a really positive story about those.
In speaking with the manager who is heading up the new Texas office here in America, he said the pricing and boom is off the hook in Texas. He has never seen anything like it. The growth has taken off. What are the biggest checkpoints today's investors are looking for when purchasing a non-primary residence, in your opinion, Liam?
I think if you're buying, you know, let's say you're buying an investment property, or even if it's property to use, but you're going to want to see some growth from it. I think the most important thing really is, number one, it comes around to your attitude to risk. So in that there are growth markets or there are opportunity markets which will be, you know, less palatable because they're unknown to you and you're not aware of the... the local tax and legal situation. But I think for me, the critical issue really comes down to the fundamentals of, you know, economic growth, employment growth, how resilient is the local economy. So if you look at somewhere like London, where there's been so much bad news now for the past 5 years because of Brexit and tax changes, but actually the London economy has performed really strongly. So even since the Brexit referendum in 2016, there's been 300,000 new jobs created in London. It's become the undoubted tech centre as well as financial capital of Europe. And, you know, that dynamism in the local economy is the issue really that propels investors to think actually this is a location which will see wage growth and strong demand from occupiers. So I think everything really, from that perspective, comes down to the strength of the local economy and the desirability of a location for employers and employees.
I did not know that London was the tech centre for Europe. I'm learning.
Without a doubt. I mean, to be fair, Berlin, Stockholm, Paris. I mean, they're all important locations, but London is several times bigger. And actually the big growth area for London is fintech, a bit like New York.
Right.
And actually, financial technology investment is a huge growth area now for both cities.
We will certainly take a look at how the growth of fintech impacts the supply and demand issue of real estate in London. All right, I've been easy on you, but now I'm going to ask you the billion-dollar question. How will the 2020 U.S. presidential election impact the U.S. real estate market, in your opinion?
My understanding is that I think that you always, or traditionally, you'll see a slight slowdown in market activity in the run-up to the election because you get a degree of uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose really the question for investors has got to be, you know, what changes? I mean, if you get a majority, if you get a Trump victory, or a Democrat victory. I mean, actually, fundamentally, what changes in terms of economic outcomes? So I think you tend to get a delay if there's uncertainty, and that's always the case. My view is, I mean, my guess, to be fair, I haven't sort of read the policy offer in detail, but my guess would be that both, you know, that both candidates, the Democrat candidate versus, and the Trump, you know, and Trump, you know, will offer, you know, a relatively sort of pro-business kind of, you know, view. There may be differences around.
We hope, Liam, we hope.
But there may be differences around, say, you know, treatment, say, you know, medical care or social security or whatever. But I mean, I guess, you know, for any politician trying to win, they have got to offer, you know, economic growth. I mean, ultimately, 100%. That's it. You know, without that, you know, you're never going to get a second term.
It is concerning that there is still a discussion ongoing about implementing a pied-à-terre tax, which ultimately is going to impact foreign investors. That goes back to, don't you think, while everybody's slowing down up to the election, isn't that just the most opportunistic time for foreign investors to enter into the U.S. market? When there is uncertainty, there is negotiability, and when there is fear, there is a lot more opportunity, no?
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I think, you know, the problem is always trying to guess, you know, when is the right time to buy? And if you're trying to be clever and actually buy at the low point of the market, you've got to pick that point of maximum pain, because and the difficulty with that is that's the point when everyone is frightened to enter the market.
But that's true.
I think, you know, if you think back to 2008 and, you know, the Lehman's collapse,
well,
at that point,
yeah,
everyone stepped back from every market. And actually, in hindsight, that the point to buy was the following day.
That's
that was
exactly
the point.
Right. It is the same thing taking place right now. Having a Brazilian buyer come in and look at a $20 million apartment and get 30% off is exactly my point, that buyers in today's market should be running to take advantage of the absolute frozen nature of this climate. What is the latest in the U.S.-Chinese trade war? Is there an end in sight? What should investors be wary of, in your opinion?
I think it's probably, I mean, you know, economists have been assuming that the trade war will resolve itself relatively quickly. I think it is unlikely to resolve itself completely in the short to medium term. I think the trade war itself probably speaks to a bigger issue, which is really a technological war or rivalry between China and the US. And I think, you know, the rationale behind the initial tariffs around, you know, concerns over China's competition or unfair competition, you know, that was a kind of starting point.
Yeah.
And that was an interesting, you know, place to start. But actually, there is, you know, there's undoubtedly a significant battle between China and the U.S. to become the tech center or the location where tech investment, you know, it dominates.
Mm.
And you can already see it, that you've got this sort of this growth of, you know, US and China, you know, almost sort of the same to different countries globally, you know, which sphere of influence you sit in. And, you know, for most countries, you know, they can happily trade with both China and America and the European Union, and that's all fine. There will be areas, particularly around tech and you know, digital services, where that will become less of an option, and I think that then begins to become somewhat more complex. But in terms of real estate and the impact on our markets, you know, whether it's in New York or in London, I think what this boils down to is whether there'll be more globalization or less globalization of investment flows in the future. And one of the things that I know, you know, from the National Association of Realtors data, there's quite a sharp contraction in the amount of mainland Chinese investment in the U.S. in the last 12 months. These are sort of individuals buying properties for, you know, for investment or for their children whilst they're at university. And some of that really comes down to this issue around actually what's the relationship between China and America. And also, I think, you know, China looking to manage outflows of capital and trying to manage capital flight and capital flows to make sure it doesn't impact on their economy and on their currency.
So basically what you're saying is that we're having a bit of a power struggle between two very tech-savvy countries, each pushing their own agenda. Let's stay tuned on that one. Yeah, I mean, I was going to ask you something politically incorrect, which is, how much do you love American beer? But you're probably not going to answer me anyway.
Oh, I love American beer.
You do?
Yeah.
Which one?
Oh, I can't remember the name of it.
Good save. I just want to say thank you so much for... what time is it there, by the way?
It's 3 in the morning. Oh, no, sorry. It's 3 in the afternoon. Sorry. It's 3 in the afternoon.
But it feels like 3 a.m., doesn't it?
Yeah.
I just want to say thank you for being on today's podcast. It has been such a treat. Thank you for tuning in to the world of real estate. Please be sure to hit the subscribe button to stay up to date with my latest episodes.